Right, good morning. Cheers. 107.6. Ian here, joined in the studio by four ladies, actually, this morning, and I'm feeling a wee bit intimidated. Be gentle with me, ladies, would you? Now, we're joined with the Chief Executive of East Lothian Council. Good morning, Angela.
Good morning, Ian.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. If lovely morning.
If you're stretching to that, pull it down a little bit. Just make yourself comfortable, yeah. And also joining us this morning from the Council, we've got the Solicitor. It's Kirsty, isn't it?
Yes, Kirsty McNeil.
Good morning, Kirsty. And from Child Welfare, wasn't it?
Children's Wellbeing. Good morning.
Children's Wellbeing. Good morning to you. Well, sorry, what was your name again?
Sharon Saunders.
Thank you very much. Now, we're talking about court closures here in East Lothian, in particular in Addington. Devastating blow for the town, the economy of the town. But there's a lot more to it than that, Angela, isn't there? I mean, it's just not a case of coming along and closing a big building. It's what goes on in that building that matters.
It is, and it's fundamental for the way that we operate and also the way that our communities operate. I think... Firstly, I'd really like to say a big thank you to everybody who worked so hard and diligently to put forward the case for the retention of the court in East Lothian. And that ranged from our own staff right through to our sheriff, the faculty of procurators, and many, many more big campaigns. So, and I think it's about having justice seen to be administered locally as well. But apart from that, the changes will see us having to bear a fair degree of additional cost as far as the administration of justice is concerned, and it won't be as effective as it is in Haddington.
But just so we get the picture, because I know the picture. I know that there was a big campaign at the Scottish Parliament, but it's the court services that made this decision to start with, not the Scottish Government, wasn't it?
The recommendations were from the Scottish Court Service that Haddington should close, and it started out that it was because of the proximity to Edinburgh. So it was no other reason other than we were within a 30-mile radius of another court that could had capacity, allegedly. And I think that we recognise that there is certainly physical capacity, there are courtrooms available, but we're not so sure that the personnel are available to make sure that our cases are heard and dealt with as swiftly and as cost-effectively as they are within Haddington at present.
So the Scottish Government are to rubber stamp it next week, aren't they?
That's right.
And is it? Do you think... I mean, I don't know if you're allowed to say, and if you can comment, fine. But don't you think this is something that the mind was made up before... They made their mind up and there's no change in them?
I think that the evidence that the Scottish Parliament have been presented with, as far as the details from the Scottish Court Service, they can see that there is a business case for it. Mm. We've disputed those facts, and I think that we've had a forensic accountant that has demonstrated that it's much more expensive to hear cases in Edinburgh than it is in Haddington, and that it takes almost twice as long.
Mm. Do you think there's a glimmer of hope, Angela? Do you think that the campaign that's been put together by everybody, including the councillors here and yourselves, and the public shouting about it, do you think there's a glimmer of hope that might...
I would hope, and I've asked to meet with Scottish Court Service very quickly, I would hope that we retain an element of justice within Haddington. Mm. One of the things that the Scottish Court Service have talked about is doing things using video conferencing, for example, and linking into the courts in Edinburgh. Now, you need a facility for that, and I would be looking to hold on to Haddington in some way so that we can actually have local people, local families come to Haddington and not have to travel into Edinburgh and be supported by our staff, because, you know, a lot of people, and Sharon knows this better than I do, when they're going to court, when it's a family law issue, for example, they don't necessarily want to be in a strange environment having to travel all the way up to Edinburgh, and they want to be with a social worker or a solicitor that they've actually become familiar with, and we want to maintain that as far as we can.
Absolutely,
as well as the trade for the town. Yeah.
I mean, let's not make no mistake about it, it's on the list. The economy of the town is important, but I think what's more important is what you've just said, because a lot of these families you're talking about, we'll come to that in a second. We're talking about the lower end of the earnings scale for a lot, and I don't mean to be patronising or anything on that with people, but we are talking about people on the lower end of the... And I commented on this morning, that these families, although they'll get their expenses, I suppose, have still got to get themselves on a bus, spend the money, and spend an hour and a half to get to the courts in Edinburgh. And that is, in my book, ludicrous.
Yeah, there's the travel and there's the cost. There's the time and the cost of actually getting to the court for families. And quite often, it's not just the individual who has to be present at court. They're accompanied by other members of their family.
Absolutely.
So it's more than one individual that's having to incur those costs.
Indeed. So, Kirsty, from a solicitor's point of view, what exactly is your job title?
My official job title is Corporate Legal Advisor.
Corporate Legal Advisor. Okay,
yes,
okay. But I mean, you're a solicitor,
yes,
though, and you would be, I would imagine, heavily involved in your job with the courts on various aspects and at various levels.
I am. I head up the litigation team for East Lothian Council, so any case involving the council in court involves one of my team travelling to court. And at the moment, they're very fortunate in the position of being able just to walk to the other end of the building to go to court. But they will now be involved in travelling up to Edinburgh and spending time in the court up there, trying to cover several different courtrooms, whereas in Haddington there are only the two courtrooms, so
Absolutely.
It's easy to manage. But
yeah.
It will definitely put a strain on my team. And
well, exactly. So there's a staffing problem
there
as
is
well.
Indeed,
so
yeah.
It's crazy. It sounds nuts to me. So, you know, from the solicitor's point of view then, and solicitors who actually travel down from Edinburgh to defend, et cetera, and be involved in court cases, have you had any kind of support or rumblings from them, or are they quietly quite happy they don't have to come out of Edinburgh?
Oh, no, there's been universal support amongst the legal profession against these proposals to close local courts. And that has come not just from the local faculty of solicitors, but also from the Law Society of Scotland, who have presented their opposition entirely against these proposals.
So it's a major no-no for you then, really.
It is,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So, and on the other side of the coin, we're off to children's welfare now.
Children's wellbeing.
I keep saying welfare, children's wellbeing. Well, I'm sorry. Same thing, isn't it?
Well, no, not really, but we could debate that another day.
Yeah, we could. So what does it mean to you then?
For us, with the work that we do with our children and families, particularly on the aspect of what we call permanence, and that's any aspect of that somebody will decide to give them a child. They've invested potentially years in preparing to become parents for that child. Add to that that the child itself is somewhere else. The child is in temporary care, waiting to be placed and permanently given parents. So there is a whole society invested in the well-being of that child and the decision that will be made about that family. And for us here in Haddington, it's great to have those decisions made locally, where families live. Decisions are made about families in the local area by people who know the local area and the community well. And in the example I've just given, the day that a family becomes the permanent parents to a child, it is a celebration. And people like to do those sorts of celebratory moments in their lives in places that they belong, places where they feel comfortable. And the prospect for many of doing that in an anonymous court in an anonymous city, I know it's only 20 miles away, but it doesn't feel good for adoptive parents and workers involved in the permanence activity.
I know, there's also the aspect, probably a harrowing aspect of families actually going to Edinburgh Sheriff Court, for example. It's such a big place. So many different things going on in it. Courts aren't just, and this is great because the courts aren't just for the criminal element as such, but going into an intimidating place, to use that word again, like the Sheriff Court in Edinburgh, for some families must be pretty stressful, I would have thought.
It can be. I mean, the activity that we have in Haddington, particularly around the children's wellbeing aspects of the court business, for us that's about supporting families and enabling families and helping people to become a new unit as quickly as possible. And that done in the local community where people feel safe, nurtured, comfortable, is a much more positive start for that family, even than it being just one event in a court in Edinburgh. It's colder.
Yes, absolutely. Do you think Angela, do you think that possibly the... sorry, Jane, you had something to say? Sorry, I thought I'd seen you put your hand up there. We've been joined with Jane Ogden-Smith this morning as well. Morning, Jane.
Morning, Ian.
Great. Angela, do you think that they have... Do you think... I mean, it's an obvious question, probably a stupid question, but do you think the court service have actually really thought about this?
I think that there is a master plan. I think that there is a plan to change justice completely across the county, across the country, I should say. I don't think that we have the full details of that just yet, and perhaps if the bigger picture had been explained, it would be easier for us to understand. I think my biggest complaint is that when these changes are taking place across the public sector, we have a really good track record of working with our partners to manage the change so that we mitigate the worst excesses on our communities. And that hasn't happened in this case. You know, it has very much been a decision that has been taken by the Scottish Courts Service to recommend this to ministers. So I think that there is an opportunity now in terms of the next months, before the court actually does close, to really look at how do we minimise the impact on individuals. And it isn't, you're right, it's not just people who've fallen foul of the law. There are a lot of ordinary families out there who from time to time need to attend the court and need the advice of a sheriff. So there's a lot of work that we still want to do, and I would urge them to work very much in partnership. I mean, we did ultimately give them the option that we would meet the savings that they had suggested they would have, about £47,000 a year, and I offered to meet those that £47,000, because it would be far more beneficial for me to keep the business in Haddington than have it move up to Edinburgh, both in terms of our staff and also the impact on the county itself.
Well, you've just touched on a question that's actually came in via text, and thank you, John in North Berwick. He's actually asked me two questions, but you just touched on a question there about the financial shortfall and the reason that the court services have given for closing everything and moving into Edinburgh. Lo and behold, I've not long read things about Edinburgh being so busy and overworked. They're talking about night courts. So that aside, but what he's asking is what you've done. What has East Lothian Council actually done to try and avert it going there financially? And the question was, is it true that you'd offered to do what you just said you've just done? He's asking, is it true that the East Lothian Council offered to pay substantial amounts of money to keep it open?
Yes, we did. We agreed with, well, I offered that they estimated that it was about £80,000 per annum to run the court, and that they would save that. Now, half of that practically was depreciation. Mm. So that isn't a cash saving, and I very much argued that. That's an accounting practice. The balance, the 40-odd thousand, I made an explicit offer that we would meet that indefinitely to keep the court in Haddington. It's cheaper for me, as I've said. You know, it means that our staff are not going up, and it's not just solicitors, it is social workers, it's people who work in our housing teams, it's people who work in our welfare rights teams, and a variety of others. So we would save that travel up and down, and at the same time, it would keep the business in Haddington and supporting local traders.
Mm. Well, the second part of the question was simply then, let me quickly just check it. The second part of that question was having offered the money, it was reported in some tabloids that nobody even responded to you. Is that true?
I think there's been various correspondence. I don't know that I got a definite no to it, but it was quite clear that the recommendations by that time. I think that one of the frustrations was that the rationale for the changes altered as we went through the process. First of all, it was our proximity to Edinburgh. Then it was the fact that the court wasn't busy enough, despite the fact that it is the 17th busiest court in the country. And then it was going to be more efficient to move up to Edinburgh. And all of those arguments we really countered and disputed.
Has the Scottish Government, for example, in any way, shape or form entered into a wee bit dialogue with you on the quiet even, or on the side? Have they entered into any kind of dialogue with you?
Well, our main point of contact has been with the civil servants in the Scottish Court Service. Mm. We have made representation to the Parliament. And I have certainly written to the Justice Committee and put our points forward. I have to say that on a cross-party basis, we've had tremendous support.
Good.
So from elected members locally on an all-party basis, and also our MSPs across the piece, both our Ian Gray, our MSP, and other list MSPs have been very, very supportive of the campaign to maintain the court in Haddington.
So when you say cross-party, we're talking all the parties. It's not like one of the parties is dodging it.
No, all the parties who operate
locally.
I'm not
mentioning any names. I'm not mentioning any names. But, you know, just asking a question.
No, we've had absolute support from all our local MSPs.
Fantastic. So anything that, from you, Kirsty, that you could add to this? I've got another couple of questions, but it's not related to what you do. So if there's anything that...
I can simply confirm what Angela says, but I also feel that Haddington Sheriff Court, when operating in cases that involve the council, we have the most vulnerable members of society present and the ones least equipped to make their way up to Edinburgh. And I'm not sure that that was factored in sufficiently within the Scottish Court Service's deliberations when they put these proposals forward. They certainly seem to have worked on the basis that it was a fit, healthy person, and in fact the figure they used time-wise for getting up to Edinburgh was 32 minutes, which I think for any of us living and operating out of East Lothian understands that that's not really accurate.
Your speeding ticket for a kick-off if you're driving, but for one, you could get up to on the A1 up to Asda maybe well inside that, but from there on in it's a nightmare, as you know. I'm quite sure you have put paper together and pointed out all these things to them, haven't you?
Yes, we have, yes.
Yeah, you've done the whole thing.
Not just through the council, but through the local faculty of solicitors and, indeed, as I mentioned before, the Law Society.
Did they respond to you?
No.
Well, you see, that's appalling. I find that absolutely appalling. Here we are. We're going to go into the Scottish Parliament next week with a decision, and you have pointed out a lot of serious shortfalls, if you like, and no response. Surely we should be screaming about that somewhere.
Certainly some of the matters were addressed when the discussions within the Justice Committee, they had two meetings where they interviewed witnesses and they did certainly raise some of those points with the witnesses, but they didn't respond directly to the local faculty or to...
So I don't get that. And from your point of view?
From my point of view, the issue around all of this, particularly in the legal aspects affecting criminality, is for our young people who find themselves in court proceedings, the 16 and 17-year-olds who have to attend court on a youth justice agenda. For them, there's a double whammy in so much as the vulnerability that Kirsty is describing to you, but also then the issue for young people. There is a lot of evidence around nowadays that tells us if young people are accountable to the community that they come from, and if decisions about their lives are made by people who know their community and know their situations, then those decisions tend to have more impact on the lives of those young people going forward. So the prospect of those decisions being made by strangers who don't have that knowledge, interest, background, history, maybe even the family continuity that some of these people have, because they may have had generational activity in court. So there's a concern that our young people, 16, 17-year-olds, may not get the positive out of the court system that they get in Haddington in Edinburgh, because ironically it can be a positive thing for young people.
Absolutely.
Having good decisions made about their futures in the local environment.
Yeah, I think a valid point is the fact that the closeness and the close proximity and I would think more immediate direct care that it's here there's a face, there it's faceless.
Exactly. And it's about having personal accountability. Yeah. And at that young age of 16, 17, if we can affect a young person's thinking, attitude, morality, citizenship, that helps potentially with the decisions that they make in their lives going forward. So the proximity and in-community decision-making and working with the young person is evidenced to have more effect.
Mm. There's going to be a lot of people worried about it, and I think it goes without saying, God forbid, and if it happens, it happens. But it's not going to shake your support and the work that you're going to do in any way, shape or form. You're going to still be there for everybody, aren't you?
That's our intention. It's certainly going to stretch the elastic.
Yeah, it certainly is, because we're getting back to the economy of the region. I know, as you said earlier, that you offered to the shortfall, but all this is actually going to cost all that and probably more. So yes, we are going to be stretching in a time where we're cutting back.
Yeah,
if you know what I mean.
I think it is definitely passing additional costs to us as the local authority. There is no doubt about that. And that was one of the arguments that we made, that this was not a saving to the public sector in its entirety. It was simply shifting the burden of expenditure, as far as justice is concerned, much more to the East Lothian Council's doorstep. That's not been something that we've... I mean, we haven't... I think the point that you make earlier about we haven't had any response. I mean, we put in a huge response to the consultation and there were no arguments came back to say, no, we refute this, we refute that, or you've got your facts wrong. So we've just... It's gone in and we've heard nothing back.
Who can you hold accountable for that, Angela? Does somebody got to be accountable to that? Who is it?
Well,
are you allowed to say?
I do think it's the Scottish Courts Service. You know,
but somebody in there is making those decisions.
Well, the people in there certainly I would say are the people that have made the recommendations to ministers, and that's the basis on which these proposals have now gone forward and the decision has been taken.
But would you know if it was like inside the court service? Are we talking a group of people or are we talking one or two people have sat down and made these decisions?
Well, there's been a review of justice, which has been ongoing for a fair while, and the Scottish Court Service does have a board. I mean, there's right. a board that has a range of different professions represented on it. I think it's actually chaired by Lord Gill. Mm. And he in particular has been reviewing the justice system for the past few years. Kirsty probably knows more about that than I do.
Well, certainly the Gill report was published a few years ago, and this seems to be part of the proposals that are following on from that. There are several other consultations in the public domain at the moment, particularly about the restructuring of the Sheriff Court. The idea being that more work will transfer from the Court of Session to the Sheriff Court. That in itself runs counter to this proposal. It simply indicates that more work is heading the Sheriff Court's way. Mm. So if we've got fewer Sheriff Courts, then logic dictates that they'll be overburdened.
It's, you know, for the man in the street, if you like, the normal person who's involved in this, in various aspects of what's going on, must be sitting there thinking, and that's why I'm trying to get to that point, who's made these decisions? And it could be like the bank, that you've got somebody at the top making a total hash of it and making the wrong decision. So who do you make accountable? But by the time that you find out and by the time you can actually do something about it, it's too late. We're closed. And, you know, I feel, what can we do about it, Angela? I know we've not got a lot of time left before then. I know there was a great group. We had the deputy leader, Michael Veitch, in. He just came in for a cup of coffee and we threw him behind the microphone, and it was the day after they'd been at the Scottish Parliament. Apart from that, you've made the MPs aware that day with the banners and the things outside. What can we do between now and then, now and next week?
Well, I think that we still continue and we'll continue with our arguments in terms of the injustice of it, if you like. And I think that I feel most aggrieved because I cannot see a business case for it. And I think that's really important. That I've spoken to a number of people when I've been out and about recently who have said, well, that's progress for you. And, you know, I think that that really is the wrong message. It may well be progress, but I'm not quite sure what the bigger picture is, as I say. And we are certainly not resistant to change. I think that in the council and with our partners, we're very proactive in looking at how do we change things to benefit local people and local communities. But we cannot see the sense in this. And that's one of the things that we're really, really trying to persuade those who will take the decision ultimately in the Parliament, that the information that they have been presented with is not correct.
That's one-sided. Totally one-sided. If they're not prepared to debate the points that you're all making, which are seriously valid points, and they're not even prepared to come back even to give me a phone call and say, you know, you just made a good point there. If they're not prepared to do that, what hope is there for us?
And I think our own MSPs recognise that. Mm. But those are not the people that are on the Justice Committee.
No, sadly.
So, and that's just the fact of life. I think one other thing that is really frustrating is the fact that, you know, we have an integrated model in East Lothian. We have the court, it sits within our building in Haddington. Our solicitors work really closely with the court staff. Our social workers work really closely, our benefits people, our housing people. It is a model of good practice, and it's a model that is being held up elsewhere as something that we should all be following. You know, there's a civic centre in Livingston that is very much lauded as being at the forefront of justice and how professions work together. Now, we have exactly the same here, and yet we're going to be facing its destruction.
It's crazy. Will I go to a couple of questions? So we'll kind of go to a couple of questions here. This is somebody who phoned me up. I said, go and stick it on an email. So, you know, getting to my age, you sometimes forget things. So he's saying here, has the council made the Scottish Court Services aware of the risks of non-attendance in Edinburgh due to the cost of travel? And in some cases, we did touch on this, I know, travel and in some cases, limited public transport, because that's a very good point. The first bus at the minute, doing a service, but let's say it's not an award-winning service, is it? So that's there. This is particularly important in cases involving children and families, as many are, often through no fault of their own, very limited incomes, and although travel can be claimed back, the cost initially has to be made by a struggle and cause hardship. As for some, it may have to be a choice between a bit of food, shopping, or a bus ticket to court. The original start of that was you obviously have made the Scottish Court Services available of all that, haven't you? Because we've touched on it with all three of us.
I think just as Kirsty was saying about the time taken, or that they have estimated it will take to travel into Edinburgh, they also have argued that the biggest proportion of people who will use the court in Edinburgh will come from the west of the county. And their costs will be minimal, so we have made that point that is only a percentage, and we dispute that it is the largest percentage. It will certainly be a percentage, but there's others who will come from further afield than Barr, Haddington, and some of our villages.
Yeah, and one other question here. Thank you. We've kind of talked about it, so hopefully that's okay for you, Danny. Angela, what would happen to the court building if the court shuts?
That's one of the reasons that I need to speak to the court service fairly quickly. It is a beautiful building in the centre of our high street, and we now need to talk to them about what the options are. When I did go in to speak to the Scottish Court Service some months ago now, they were suggesting that it would be put on the open market, that they would look for either commercial use or potentially residential. Now, I have to say that I have made my views very strongly known to the Scottish Court Service that it is entirely inappropriate for residential accommodation. We share the front entrance. A lot of the facilities that they have are actually shared with the council, and it would be madness to suggest that you could have some flatted accommodation in it. So I need to sit down with them now and work out what the options are. The one thing I would say is that one of the arguments that was put forward by the court service was that the backlog of maintenance extended to £500,000. Now, I need to understand exactly what kind of liability the council then would be taking on if we had to put forward a proposal to adopt that building.
Well, first of all, you shocked me saying the council didn't own it. I thought the council owned it. Now you've just said there's a backlog of maintenance, a serious amount of money there. This couldn't be an underlying thing for the court service saying, well, we need to spend a lot of money there. Let's get shot of it.
Well, no, we disputed that as well. We actually share the costs of repair and maintenance. Right. So while the Scottish Court Service do own the front part of the building and several rooms, the maintenance of the roof, for example, and the stairwell coming in, because we do share it between us, we would share the costs of anything there. Now, by and large, public buildings like that are maintained pretty well, particularly high usage ones such as the court and our own building. So we cannot see how the repairs extend to £500,000, and in fact, I think about 200,000 of that is to rewire the court service. Now, we argue that we could probably rewire the whole of John Muir House for that. Mm. So there's a wee bit of discussion that still has to be undertaken as far as the backlog of repairs is concerned.
It sounds seriously loaded. I mean, you're nodding away there. I mean, you're the solicitor here.
Well,
I mean, for the legality side of it, isn't there something maybe, and I'm sure you've looked, isn't there something in the legality that you could maybe come up with and say, well, hang on a second, you can't actually legally do this?
I think we've certainly disputed the figures. We've found the original documents when the first floor rooms were sold to the court service, and well, Angela says there's a split in maintenance costs. For instance, the split in maintenance for the roof is 16% is to be paid by the court service, the rest paid by the council,
right.
Probably based on the original square footage of the county buildings at the time. But so their percentage is really quite small, and so it's very difficult to understand how they've reached this figure of nearly £500,000 for backlog maintenance, and we just don't think it's an accurate figure at all. It's a figure they've used, I think, to justify the closure.
I'll tell you what, sitting on this side of the desk and listening to what you said and what Angela just said, I'd strongly suggest whoever's made this decision has actually come and looked at that building. They haven't seen it. If they can suggest for one second that that can be turned into residential, they haven't seen it, Angela. They haven't actually been here and looked at that building. You couldn't turn that building into residential even if the council wasn't in the back door.
I don't think you could. I mean, I just think that it would be crazy. Who would want to live in a building where, you know, there's lots of coming and going? It's a main thoroughfare. You know, that if anybody's been in the building, you know that people go up to that first floor and come into our building. The doors are, you know, constantly in use. So it just wouldn't make sense
it's
at all.
It's a gorgeous, beautiful building, but I just can't see it being flat.
The registry office underneath.
Sorry?
The registry office is underneath the courtroom.
Yeah.
So there would be people getting married underneath your flat at regular intervals.
Yeah, we have our married room underneath that goes out into the courtyard. So people do come in there for civil weddings and the like.
Absolutely.
That's madness. Honestly, the things I don't know about myself, and I live here, but I can't see how they could possibly get to this. So let's summarise then. You've got a nightmare on your hands, frankly. You've probably got a biggest nightmare, haven't you?
Nightmares may be a bit strong because we do what we do and we do it as well as we possibly can. Children's wellbeing is very much about supporting the most vulnerable families and children, young people in our community. And whether that's here in Haddington or in Edinburgh, we'll continue to do our damnedest to support those people. Our interests are that our children have the best start in life and can be looked after as best as possible with their own families wherever possible, and if not, in good care that we help provide for them. If that means we have to trundle up to Edinburgh, waste a bit of time, then I've got very dedicated workers who will do that.
Absolutely.
They would rather be doing that in Haddington, and that will stretch the elastic of goodwill and resource just that little bit further, and it will impact on a number of people's pockets and purse strings that really we would rather it didn't.
Is there anything the listening public can do? They're listening to us this morning. They're hearing things like me for the first time, actually. The tabloids haven't actually reported the full facts, have they? I mean, we've got the Courier here, but I mean, the National, your Scotsman and people like that haven't actually dug into this, have they?
Possibly not as much as we would have liked, although we have issued our press releases and we've issued statements and so on to National. I have to say that the Courier locally have done a really good job though, in terms of their campaign, and I don't think it's too late. You know, I still think that if your listeners, you know, they can log on to East Lothian Courier's website, you can download a letter to Kenny McCaskill and still send it off. You know, I think we should still keep the pressure on, and we certainly will be within the council. I think the one thing that I would say is that it is a really disappointing decision, but again, for the people of East Lothian, it's important that they understand that we will now be working with the Scottish Coach Service to make sure that we reduce any the worst effects of this change, and try and reduce the impact on people and our communities.
So we can still get in touch with Kenny McCaskill then, and let's get on. And that's my point, though. The Courier has done a great supportive job, but the Courier is here. It's in Haddington, it's East Lothian, it's got a circulation of about 15,000 people. The big picture is the people in the city and the people in the country seeing this. Because let's not forget, it's not just Haddington.
It's
around the country. I think, is it six different courts? I mean, we've got Duns down on the borders. Is it Jebbers?
I think if you take into account also the GP courts, it's something like 17 courts.
Is
but
it?
Major sheriff courts is about six. Yeah.
But I would say Haddington is by far the busiest of all those courts. And I think that's, you know, there are various arguments, and you know there are some smaller courts that probably don't generate the business, and I think that I would be the first to recognise that, but Haddington is a very, very busy court. Now, being in the same building, I know on a daily basis just the numbers that are waiting to go into court, the number of witnesses that are there, and the number of families that are there in any one day. So we're particularly aggrieved because it is a very busy court. It's not, you know, it's not a court that only sits 2 or 3 days a week. And there are two courts there that, by and large, operate 5 days a week.
Yeah, you stole my thunder there, Angela, because I did a wee bit of research on that. And you're absolutely right. Haddington shouldn't actually be on that list at all. And I'm not just saying that because we're here. But if you put into perspective what you've just said and the GP courts, what you've just said, yes, there's maybe a great argument for some of the smaller places. But this is a major one. This isn't one of your... This is Premier League, if you like, of courts. We're not talking first, second or third division. And I looked into that, the kind of thing on that, because it's something I've been quite annoyed about. But there's a lot of I don't really know. And I'm not... And if I don't really know, and I live here, what about our families and whatnot? They don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And you only have to drive past it to see how busy it is and people that stand outside it day in, day out. You just have to... You have to see that. And it's all there. There's... out in the courtyard at the front, if you like, which is a nice bit. The amount of people that's kind of just wandering about there that's going to see how busy it is. Which brings us to the busy fact, finally. It was reported that Edinburgh Sheriff Court was overworked. Wasn't big enough, can't cope. There's no question of that. It's you can Google it, you could, and they talk about night courts, they're talking about this, that and the next thing. How can you see the workload from Haddington alone going in there? And making it, how is it going to make it any easier for them? I would imagine the people that work in Edinburgh Sheriff Court, for example, must be cringing at the thought of this workload that's going to hit them.
Well, the Scottish Court Service say that they're going to transfer the staff from Haddington Sheriff Court up to Edinburgh Sheriff Court, so there shouldn't be any impact on their existing staff. That's the argument that's been put forward to us. Personally, I cannot see that it's going to create a more efficient service. Matters are dealt with in Haddington Sheriff Court within targets, within timescales. That's not the case currently at Edinburgh.
No, it's not.
And so I can't see it.
It's all right putting staff up there, Kirsty, but they haven't got the room. It's all right putting the extra staff up there. Which court are you going to put them in? All the courts up there are overworked as it is. They haven't actually got extra space. And bear in mind, that court building's only, 8 years old or something? And they expanded from where they were up on the High Street to make it bigger, and it was before it opened, it was too small, you'll recall.
Yes, I can only agree with you. I don't see it being able to cope with the work from Haddington.
Crazy. Listen, that's like, is there anything else we want to add we've maybe missed? Have we caught?
No, I think we've covered the range of arguments that we've put forward. Thank you very much for inviting us here this morning. It's been really useful. It's disappointing, though, the decision, I have to say. Very disappointing.
I think it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. But then people will say, and let's be fair, we're trying to get an open debate about it, if you like. But how can we do that if what you're saying, and you're absolutely correct, I knew what you were saying was correct before we started, but there's people out there don't know that. That if you're not getting a response for an argument that you've put forward, and they're just blanking you, then how can we possibly get this changed? So, you know, how can we possibly do anything about it? Because it reeks of, seriously... This decision's done and dusted.
I think it's the way the proposal, the bill has been formed. If we'd been allowed to decouple Haddington, then it may have allowed some of the changes to go through, and we could really have fought our corner a bit more ably on the very strong arguments that we have that it's wrong to close Haddington Sheriff Court. But it was all swept up together. So the entire closures, both the justice, sheriff courts and the other smaller courts have all been tied up together. So it really wasn't possible to isolate one from the others.
It's crazy. I remember a couple of years ago when they were talking about this that people were saying, don't worry, Haddington, there's no chance Haddington's going to be on this list. And it shocked the life out of us when it was.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. Ladies, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ian.
Great topic this morning. Thank you, Jane.
You're welcome.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. Welcome back anytime, any topic. Let's see if we can get a response to this. And let's also, boys, girls, ladies and gentlemen, And yes, youngsters too, let's get the school bells on it. Get letters into Kenny McCaskill. ASAP. That's, I think it's next week then. Oh, just quickly before you go, if they make the decision in the Scottish Parliament next week, let's just say that the Scottish Government make the decision, yes, okay, let's rubber stamp that and close it. Kirsty, maybe for you, is there an appeal process? Is there a process where you can go and say, hang on, there's no, that, no, they make the decision, that's it, there's no going back?
No, I think the legislation will then start to go through the usual process. I think that's really when we need to get into very detailed conversations with the Scottish Courts Service about the timescale for the closure and how we retain as much locally as we possibly can, linking into Edinburgh Sheriff Court.
Great. Timescale, do you think, if it goes through?
They say by the end of 2015, so we've got about 18 months
to sort it. Crazy. Absolutely crazy. They made the decision quicker than that, haven't they?
Yeah.
Ladies, thank you very much indeed.
Thank
Wonderful.
You.
Thank you. Good morning to you. Great to have your company. Angela Leach, our Chief Executive, is here for you, working for you, and all we have to do is ask. If you don't ask, we can't give you the answer. It's as simple as that. Welcome along. It's East Coast FM.